From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of amazing ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In today's podcast, I have my guest, Mr. Adrian Toby, with me of Groundhog fame. And I entitled this episode, Leveling Up Your Email Campaigns. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation that Adrian and I had. This podcast is sponsored by Stunning Digital Marketing, the agency that can help protect your WordPress website today. Go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com and see what we can do to help you protect your business investment. That's stunningdigitalmarketing.com. Hey, everybody, Rob Cairns here. And today I'm here with my guest, Mr. Adrian Toby of Groundhog. How are you, Adrian?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Great to have you again, and good to see you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Yeah, my pleasure. We were talking offline about some of your thoughts on email marketing, and we were kind of saying how email marketing has become very hard. And I think it's hard to do, and I think, honestly, AI is starting to convolute the whole process just a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
I've been actually like really thinking about how email marketing has become difficult, and which is counterintuitive, or at least counterculture to sort of the email marketing culture that's out there, which is like there's everybody on Twitter saying use AI to like, you know, write your newsletters, and all you need to do is like, you know, plug and play 8 subject lines to improve engagement by 30%, and like CRM providers and email marketing software providers are guilty of this. And I'm guilty of this as well, saying like, you know, you're just one like email sequence away from sort of unlocking a whole extra revenue stream in your business. When the reality of the situation is that it's just not that easy anymore. There has been a major effort on behalf of inbox providers like Gmail, iCloud, so Apple, Yahoo, to really reduce the effectiveness of email marketing in the inbox and make the barrier to entry for small businesses to get seen in the inbox much higher. And so I have some thoughts and opinions on what sort of the current state of the inbox is and what small businesses should be doing to be seen in the inbox. So I'm gonna start off with just a little bit of sort of like anecdotal experience. So I, being sort of an email oriented guy, have a few email inboxes. I have Adrian at groundhog.io. I've got Adrian at mailhawk.io. I got Adrian at hollerbox. I have Adrian at adriantoby.com. Those are all real email addresses. If you want to email me with a question, go right ahead. I keep my ear to the ground. If you want to chat, we can chat. So I get a lot of email, as you can imagine. I get probably upwards of 100 to 200 emails per day. About 55% of that is corporate correspondence. Of the email that I look at, I'm going to preface that. So of the email that I read, of those 200, you know, plus emails per day across all these inboxes, 55% is corporate correspondence. That's stuff like credit card notices or account information, action required stuff or just like stuff that I have to do just to keep the operation running, right? Of the email that I read, about 55% of that. And then the other 40% is personal correspondence. You know, it's whoever sending me a cat photo or something, or my wife wants to send me an email to book for a special event that's coming up, like stuff like that. And then 5% that I invest my time in is marketing. And there are really only three types of email is that I've laid out. There's corporate correspondence, which is just your notifications and transactional emails and stuff. There's personal correspondence. And everything else is basically just marketing. There's different types of marketing. There's different ways to do marketing emails. But really, anything that's not corporate correspondence and personal correspondence is just marketing. And I personally only probably invest maybe 5% of my time doing email, looking at that. Like if I see a catchy subject line, I'm like, okay, what's the deal? But beyond that, a lot of it just gets lost in the noise. I'm not sure. I'll actually throw it back to you. Do you feel the same way or?
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah, somebody who's in this space a lot, I find I don't read most marketing emails. I just kind of look at subject lines. Oh yeah, this is good today. This isn't good today. I'm not interested in the ones that say, oh, you can have 50% off. I don't care. I move on very quickly. Unless it's something I'm really looking for. Like, for example, recently I bought glasses online. So the glass company I deal with was sending me emails every day, and that I paid more attention to. But once I'm done with that, that goes away too. So
precisely, right? We get so much.
Yeah.
And especially like now, our society more than ever, everybody is stressed out, stretched thin, and like people are just over it. It's true. Mentally, there is very little capacity left to invest in just the marketing, the basic marketing drivel that most of us are putting out. I'm putting it out. I'm adding to the noise. I know that.
So am I.
It does have its place, right? You still need to have like some follow-up stuff or some long-term nurture. Like that has its place because sometimes it works, right? But a lot of people are expecting it to work all the time and it's just not going to. It's probably more uncommon that it works than common that it works, right? It's more likely to not work than to work is sort of my opinion on a lot of the stuff that we're putting out. And I saw Derek, who is doing Sunshine Photo Cart, which is like a cart system for photographers. He was on Twitter, and he was like, and he's actually a Groundhog customer of ours, which I think is pretty cool. But he sent out an email to a bunch of people that canceled their subscription, and I've done this before, right? He's like, you round up a bunch of people that canceled their subscription. You want to send them an email, be like, why did you cancel, right? But there's no segmentation on when they canceled. There's all of that. And so you're sending an email to maybe like 1500 people and you're like, hey, what's up? But you're and you're super professional and you're super nice about it. But, you know, you're like, help me improve the product and or help me sort of like figure out our analytics here. But there's really that's a lot to ask of someone who's already divested themselves entirely of your product.
I think so.
It's just a lot to add. Like we're asking a lot from people to pay attention to us when there's very little in it for them. Like you mentioned that you just straight up ignore the discount code subject line emails.
Yep.
Which is totally fair. I send those.
I know you do.
They're not very effective. The truth is that they're not very effective. They're very effective for a very specific target market, which is not always the target market that I love to work with. But I'd rather, you know, take their money than not, so we send them. But that email is pretty ineffective for most people. Yeah. And so the question becomes, okay, so all of our emails, like, they're not working. They're ineffective. Like, what gives? Like, what do we do instead, right? Like, what's if we want to be seen and heard, like, what should we be doing? And I have... yet to come up with a specific formula for how to write an email that works. But I'm going to take 30 seconds to open up something that I wrote a little bit earlier, because I want to make sure that I get all my points. So let me just pull this up here. So I want to start off with the first email that I sent that actually worked, which I sent on April 1st of this year, which is the reason that we're actually having this conversation, as it turns out.
Yeah.
So I sent an email. I saw InstaWP,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
They're great. They did an April Fool's joke where they were like pretending to launch a page builder, and they're like, go like, hey, we're launching a new page builder, go check out the details here. And it's like, April Fools, this is just a joke, we're not doing a page builder, we're just going to focus on hosting, which is like, haha, very funny. And I'm like, hey, it is April Fools, I want to do something, because I feel like I'm like, Groundhog is a brand, it's like we're going towards like very snarky, very cheeky, very sarcastic, like we're just sort of being counterculture, because like all the CRMs and all like SaaS companies, basically like all their brand is exactly the same. And their tone is exactly the same. They're all very approachable, very, very professional. I'm like, that's boring, right? I wanna be a little bit like edgy. And so I sent out this April Fool's joke, because a lot of our brand is associated with being self-hosted and open source and flat rate cost.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, well, what would be completely contrary to that? It's like, well, if Groundhog turned into a SaaS and we started like doing the whole software as a service thing and billing based on the number of contacts that you have and hosting data in a centralized location and spying on customers and just doing a bunch of like shady SaaS stuff that SaaS does. And so we sent out an email and the subject line was Groundhog is going SaaS, right?
Yeah.
And we started just like, hey, listen, we're going SaaS because, you know, $600 a year is just not enough to charge. So we're going to start price gouging our customers by charging more for based on contacts. We're going to host all of your data in a centralized location so that we can spy on your subscribers and do a whole bunch of shady privacy stuff. We are going to, what else did I say in that email? Because it's a hilarious email. So we're a totally bootstrapped company. We spend the money that we make, but we're going to turn into a SaaS so we can take venture capital money and sell out and be beholden to investors instead of focusing on the features that are actually going to improve the lives of small business, right? So that's the email that we sent out. And then it goes on, and it's written in sort of like a very like absurd but professional way. And so right until the end, people are like doubting it. They're like, is this email real? And like just before like the pieces click, we're like, April Fools, right? And The reason, and I got maybe 30 replies to this email across social channels, in my inbox personally, which is the most that I've ever received, really. Which for an email company might be a little bit embarrassing, but it's like, compared to the stuff, like, just like, hey, you know, new feature release or whatever, like, that we typically send, like, this was, I got, some of the responses I got were like, oh my god, I shit my pants, this was fucking brilliant. This is the best ad for anything that I've ever seen in a long time, like were some of the responses that we got. Yeah, and I'm like, why did this email out of all of the, and I think I'm a pretty good copywriter. Like,
you are.
I'm not terrible, but why did this email specifically work out of all of the emails that I've ever sent? It didn't have an offer. There was not really any value in it. Like, there was a big red button that said, see the official press release. And it takes them to, the video of the guy dancing. What's oh my god, what is it? It doesn't matter. But it was just a joke prank, right? Like, there's no call to action. There was really nothing of value in this email, but why did it work? And I have a theory. So my theory of why it worked is a couple reasons. So the first thing that happened when they looked at email is they see Groundhog is going SaaS, and that immediately causes a fear-based reaction.
Emotion.
Okay.
Emotion.
Immediate emotion. Immediate panic, urgency, fear. Second, they start reading the introduction. It sounds very professional, right? It's compounding, like it's settling in. But as they get deeper into the email, it starts to become absurd, right? And then that starts creating doubt, confusion. And then just before the pieces click, we do the whole April Fool's gag, which causes immediate relief and release of tension. And so there's a whole set of feelings and emotions that happen while reading the email. And I think what really made it work is that it made people feel. Right? Like most email is just really drivel. It doesn't cause feeling. Like when we send a discount code, people don't feel. It's just like, okay, great. Thanks. Like,
yeah. Okay. That's another offer.
It's just, I don't feel anything. Yeah. As I don't feel gratitude. It's like, I know you're sending that offer to other people. It's not like I'm special. Right? So maybe the best way to elicit feeling from people in your email marketing is not to scare the bejesus out of them. but what it caused me to do, and it's like, okay, so people felt and they expressed to me in the replies that it made them feel. And so feeling is important in order to get engagement. So yeah. I went back to all of the emails that I remembered that I loved reading. All the newsletters that I loved, I went back in my inbox and I'm like, I remember this email. Like and I went through it and I'm like, why did I think that this was a great email? Why did I engage with it? And I found several common themes among all of them. And I have a list and I'm just going to go through them. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. It's like, why did I personally think that these emails were great? And why do I know that other people also thought they were great? So, theme number one of a great email is that I cared, and I mean like really cared, about the subject or topic of that email, which seems obvious. Mm-hmm. People care that Groundhog is self-hosted, flat rate cost, and open source. And so when I took that away, they cared about that. And when I read other emails, like there's a newsletter that I love to read. It's called No Mercy, No Malice, Economist in New York. And he basically does hot takes on like on economy and SaaS and big tech and a bunch of other stuff. And I find it highly engaging because I care about the state of the economy and I'm a business owner and this is stuff that I care about. And either I'm highly engaged because I care about the subject and I either agree with his take or I very much disagree with his take. And that's eliciting an emotion from me. So the question is the email, do people care about the subject of the email that you're sending? Would you care if you saw that email in your inbox? Right? If you did not receive your email and you wouldn't care about it, write a different email. It's like you can send it, but just don't expect high engagement. And so if you don't know, like ask yourself, what do my ideal customers care about? If you don't know who your ideal customer is, then there's a bigger problem, right? And we have to deal with that. I don't think we have time for that today. But if you know your ideal customer, ask yourself, what do they care about? If you don't know, what do you care about? Because you should be your ideal customer. And then you can write topics and subjects and content and send them to them that you care about, right? And people are typically able to recognize passion through the written word. Like when we read the great novels and the great books, that wasn't drivel that someone just spat out of ChatGPT. Like we can recognize the passion, and that's why the great books have lasted for so long.
Yes.
It's because we can recognize that. Okay. The second theme was that the outcome of that topic is consequential, which is a little bit hard to sort of put into words, but I tried. And so basically, either directly or indirectly, what happens as a result of the topic of the email is going to affect me.
Yes.
Right? If it's Google policy changes, that is going to indirectly affect my business. If it's like we started being like very health conscious in our house, right? If I got an email, it's like common household items that are leaching microplastics into your water. That's consequential, yes. Right? Like I, the information within this matters in my day to day. And that was the second theme of all of the great emails that I've read. Like that is consequential. Like if I were to implement something or learn something from this, it is actively applicable. And you might be thinking, hey, like, you know, if I send an offer to someone and they were to implement our product, that would be consequential, but that's too many steps to get there.
Yeah.
Right? It needs to be immediately apparent. Like there has to be like immediate value there. Okay. Third theme, it relates to my current situation. One of the, I started writing a part two to my whole, I'm starting like a whole like email is hard series where like I sort of just like blast thoughts in an email and send it out because I as you can probably tell, I'm really passionate about this subject and I care, right? And I want other people to care because they should, because it matters to being a good sender and practicing good sender habits. And one of the things in part two that I'm writing is like what we're seeing is businesses, legacy businesses, they've been around for a long time, 15 plus years. They've been collecting people's email addresses and data for 15 years. They've never been regularly sending emails. And then, you know, they get into like the whole email marketing automation spin. Yep. And they're like, hey, listen, this is going to solve your problem, right? You need to be emailing people, right? And they're like, okay, I need to be emailing people. And then they upload their 15-year-old list of people to Groundhog or whatever other CRM and send that email to that 15-year-old list of people. 15 years is a long freaking time.
Yep. Too long.
It's a long time. People's lives change. People move companies. People's situation change. People move countries. Like, people start doing different things. People die.
Yep.
Right? Like, 15 years is a long time. 6 months is a long time in this industry.
Yep.
And if you just plan on like sending an email, it's like, oh, I have all these like high quality email addresses that I collected at conferences and stuff. It's like, no, you don't. That email list is trash. I'm sorry. It just is. And what's going to happen is you're going to send an email to a bunch of people whose live situations currently do not relate to the knowledge, offer, value that you can provide them. And then what's going to happen is you're going to get blocked to spam. You're going to get bad sender reputation. There's just a whole bunch of bad stuff that's going to happen. And so all the great emails that I've ever read actively related to my current life situation. It's like, hey, listen, are you currently experiencing like a plateau in your business and you want to increase revenue? It's like, that's me. I would love to do that. And that was a couple years ago. We're good now. it's like, you have to meet your people where they are. And if you're just sending them stuff because you think you know where they are, that's just not going to get you to where you want to go.
Yep.
And it also has to be relatable. That's the second part of sort of it relates to my current situation. You have to send stuff that's relatable to their situation. And I have a couple suggestions on how you can do that. You can use stories. Like if you have personal stories that you've been through, Like, as an example, let's say that you're a business coach or something, which there's a lot of. That's cool. You're a business coach and you're trying to sell business coaching and you want someone to sign up for business coaching and you're going to say, well, here's how I went from, you know, my story started out like being homeless. Like that's actually a really common one that I see. Someone on your list might be at that point where they're like, I'm going to experience homelessness unless I can actually figure something out here. And it's like, this is how I went from almost being homeless to, you know, being okay. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, if someone's currently in that situation, you can pretty much guarantee that they're going to read that. And so obviously all the stories that you have might not relate to everybody, but that's okay. We can talk about some hyper-personalization stuff a little bit later about how you actually know where people are at, and so you can send them the right message at the right time, so you're not just sending email to everybody, which is also not a good idea. And also, like, so much of the email that we send is, like, so professional.
Yes.
It's very inoffensive. And pretty much everybody is sending professional, inoffensive email, but that shit, it just gets lost with, like, everybody else, right? If it all sounds the same, then none of it's different.
And how do you send it?
And when we do that, we lose part of the language that the English language beholds on us, is the ability to practice empathy. Right. And when we're trying to relate to people, right, empathy is lost in the professionalization of the written word. And so whenever I write an email, I just, it comes from here onto paper. I don't put it through ChatGPT. The only thing that happens is that my wife spell checks it. That's literally the only thing that happens. and then it goes out, because I want people to know who we are, not who professional corporate brand is, because empathy is lost through that.
Yes.
And it's really hard to relate to people. Like, corporate voices do not relate to real people. People do business with people.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Okay. The fourth theme. And there's only one more after this, so we got two more. The fourth theme of every great email that I've ever written has challenged a previously held belief or idea that I had.
Mm.
Being challenged immediately gets your gears turning and elicits an engagement response. That's why subject lines like "you're doing email wrong" work. Because your brain will immediately respond, "No, I don't. I do email good, and I can prove it, and I'm going to read to prove you wrong." Right? And it's like the mind is stimulated by confrontational questions, and ideas and belief systems, right? And so going back to, like, the business coaching example. Right. And it's like that person who is currently, like, facing homeless, their idea might be that that's the only option. Right. It's like and the challenging belief might be that you can choose to do that, or you can choose a better alternative. Right. And they're like, "Well, I don't know. Maybe that's not." And it's like, and here's how. It's like, well, OK, maybe I'm wrong. Like, but let's find out. Because they're going to read to prove themselves right. And then your job as the writer, as the expert, as the person of value, is to methodologically outline your case for why there is a better alternative.
Yeah.
Right? Because people have their preconceptions, their notions, their ideas, and getting them to change is hard. And you have to do it in a methodical way. All right, so... You don't always have to be so opaque, by the way, like I said, "you're doing email wrong" is like a subject line. Like, yes, it works, maybe. But you don't have to be so opaque all the time. You can be a little bit more subtle. And some ways you can do that is just offer opposing perspectives. So, like, let's say you're writing an email. You can include both sides of a conflict, like, within that. And then ask, what do you agree with? And then put some engagement stuff, like maybe like a survey or a link or whatever, and ask people what they think. Right. People are, when you offer opposing perspectives like that, people are actually really, they're like, I want this person to know what I think. Right. Yeah. People love sharing their opinions. Asking hard questions, because the impulse is to answer them. Right. That's why, we did all the Sagittology training back in the Training Business Pros days. It's like every like fourth sentence was like a question, because the questions engage the mind. Right.
Yeah.
And then you have to make evidence, like, you can't just, like, spout stuff. right? You have to make evidence-backed assertions that challenge whatever their previously held belief or notion or idea may be, right? Or even the status quo. Like, if you have evidence to the contrary, your responsibility is to share that with them for why they need X product or service or whatever, or why they just need to make a change that might not even require your product or service. Like, my through this, I'm challenging the preconception that email is easy, right? Which a lot of people, they just load up their newsletter and their latest post, and they just send that out to get lost with all the other drivel that everybody else is sending out.
Yep.
And I'm also making the assertion that what you're sending out is probably drivel.
It's a fair
right? And I'm like, I don't send out drivel, right? So you're like offended by that. And then, but what's going to happen is you're going to analyze, well, if people just stopped sending or stopped receiving my emails, would they even notice? Would they care?
Yeah.
Right? You're going to ask yourself that question, even if you don't like the answer. Right. And so that's what I'm sort of doing, is like, I am challenging your previously held ideas and beliefs about email, not yours specifically, Rob, just like everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. The royal your. Yeah.
The royal your. Right. The
yeah.
royal your.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one. And then we can talk about some other stuff if you want, or we can keep talking about this. But the fifth theme of every great real email that I've read is that it was entertaining.
Yes.
Entertainment is a $2.53 trillion industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's Hollywood, that's video games, that's YouTube, that's podcasts. Like, that is the value of this industry. I didn't make that number up. I got that from a very official website called Statista. I mean, you could just Google value of the entertainment industry, and that's the number it'll spit out. So, but that's where I got that number. And obviously, being entertaining is easier said than done, right? Yes. It's like, email is hard. It should be hard. And so here are some suggestions that I have to make your emails more entertaining. So one of them is just, and people are afraid to do this, understandably, but adding opinion into your email.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy, right? It's like, yeah. That's very scary. And I understand that.
Because you're going to rub somebody the wrong way sooner or later. Today's world?
Yeah. So I sent out, but all of this that I'm sharing with you, I sent out in an email. And at the bottom of that email, I had a survey. It's like, loved this email. It was okay. Hated this email. Three buttons at the bottom. I had maybe, the ratio was 100 to 1.
Yeah.
But it did rub people the wrong way. A couple people didn't like it, which, fair. Guess what? Those people are not my customer. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're not about it, they're not about it. That's okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. I want to work with the people who loved this email, because those are my people. Those are the people that are going to get it. Those are the people that are going to be easy to work with. Right. And if you're just like corporate speak, that's like flatlined, appeals to everybody. I get it. Like, once you're like a $10 million company, fine. If you're like a solo operator or like a small business, like, be scrappy. Like, you can afford it, because you don't want to work with everybody. You want to work with the people that get you, that are on the same wavelength as you, because that's just going to make everything smoother and easier. Right. And so if you add, like, there's a reason that TV shows like The View are still around.
Yeah.
Right. It's because people engage with that. Well, love it or hate it. Like, they engage. And yeah. Your opinion doesn't necessarily have to be like super controversial, like politics or something like that. Like, maybe don't, I don't inject politics into my emails. Oh my God. That'd be crazy. But you can like add, like, I have an opinion about email, and like, I'm going to put that in here because I think it's hard and other people say it's easy and I disagree.
But the engagement factor is a big one. Like, I can remember before your time, because you're a little younger, and I can say that, there was a sportscaster by the name of Howard Cosell. he sportscast for ABC, did boxing, he did NFL football. And there was a church in the States that used to auction off bricks. And every time Cosell came on the screen, the person who won the auction got to throw the brick at TV. And somebody asked Howard what they thought, and he said, I don't care. As long as they like me or hate me, just watch me and engage with me. I don't care what they do. It's that same old thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be, you can't. Did you watch Hamilton?
Yes.
Right? What's the guy's name? It's like, don't tell them what you're against or what you're for.
Yeah, I forget his name.
What's his name? Yes. The senator. I forget. Senator Barnes? Senator Burke? I don't know. I forget what his name. I'm not an American, right? I'm a Canadian, so I don't.
Me too.
But he's like, don't tell people what you're against or what you're for, so you can play both sides. And yeah. on the flip side, Hamilton, the main character, well, and also like a real person, was like, well, I'm gonna stand up, and I'm gonna stand for what I believe in. I'm gonna let people know that. And he attracted people that were similar in his cause and in his thinking, while the other guy who wanted to play both sides fell into obscurity.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, you know, plant your flag in the ground and say what you think. Yep. Is sort of my opinion on the subject. Okay.
So is mine.
Language. Use language. We have this wonderful language with lots of different words that we can use, and then what we do is we put it through a corporate filter, which removes all the fun language.
Yeah.
And so the subject line of the email, of this email that I sent out, which did fairly well, was email is fucking hard.
Yeah.
That is not corporate.
No, not at all.
No, that's my voice, and that is what I shouted to myself in anger after emails that I had previously written, worked really, really, really hard on, that didn't perform well because they were filtered. And so I just removed the filter, and I'm like, here's what I think. Email fucking hard. And people are going to look at that, and they're like, they see corporate, plain, like pared down, inoffensive, fucking hard. I'm like, what? And it's like shock. And then like, what? And it's like, I haven't seen that in a long time. And then they click into it, and I'm like, this is the state of it. Like, here's what I think. And they're like, and I got a few responses, and like, this is so refreshing. Like, you had me until the end. Like, I was engaged. I feel how you feel about this subject. Yeah. It's like, but they needed to be shocked out of just their scan mode. Right. So we use language. Now, you don't have to swear all the time. There's a lot of different words that you can choose from. But consider being a little bit shocking in your delivery with all the wonderful words that we can use. Another way to be entertaining is to be unpredictable. And in my email, I say predictability breeds boredom. Anyone who's married knows that. A little bit of humor, right? Which is suggestion number four is be funny.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, easier said than done again.
True.
But so many people are afraid to be funny because comedy is usually offensive. Like clean comedy is like, doesn't really cut it anymore. Like,
boring.
Like I love Seinfeld, and that was pretty clean. That was a pretty clean show. But if you've been to a comedy club in like the last 5 years, like it's not like that anymore. Yeah. Right. Like people's tastes have moved on from that. And so take a risk. It would be my suggestion. And you will probably offend somebody. And my opinion is that's fine.
Yeah.
So what? Like, so what? What are they going to do? Like, if they're not a customer, right? Like, if you're sending emails out to leads, like, they're not paying you, there is absolutely zero downside other than the fact that you might not be able to email it again, but why would you want to? Because they probably weren't going to work with you anyway. And if they were, they probably wouldn't have been a great fit.
That's right.
So if you're writing an email and you think of something funny, just take a risk. Put it in. My last point for the theme, which is be entertaining, is that if you're going to write an email, it's got to be energetic.
Yeah.
Right? If you were to stand up and present the content of your email with low energy, nobody would listen. So why would you write an email with low energy?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, go drink a Red Bull and then write your email or something. Right? And your energy is going to transfer into the content. It is amazing how people can perceive the tonality and the energy ooze out of something that gets sent over digital and they're reading on their screen. Our ability to perceive that, the sender, is incredible. And you should use that to your advantage. Like like corporate drivel is always going to lose to someone with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Always. And you can stand out like that. So just to summarize, I just to go back through it. Number one, people got to care. And if you don't care, guess what? Other people don't care. Yeah. Straight up. The subject, the topic, the outcome of that must be consequential. It has to affect them in some way. Mm-hmm. And they have to understand that. It has to be relatable and relate to their current situation. It has to challenge a previously held idea or belief.
Yep.
And it must be entertaining. And if it can include, like, if you could just like get like three of those in an email, you have a really good email. If you can get all five, you have a great email. And you will see the difference in the engagement of the people that you send it to. Yeah. Now, it is one thing to write a great email. It is another thing to send that email to the right people.
Yep.
So we can talk about that too. And if you're thinking to yourself at this point that all this sounds very hard, that's because it is. Email is hard. Bad email is easy. Good email is hard.
Hard.
And it should be.
I think the biggest problem in email marketing is people don't send to the right people. They don't segment their list. They look at their list and they say, I've got a client who's got a jewelry store and they like to send out their offers to everybody. And I've been trying to train them to say, no, don't do that. If you know 10 people that came in and looked at gold necklaces, don't send them a diamond ring email, send them an email on what interests them, what they're looking for, what they want. Because if you don't send them what they want, they're not going to open the email to start with.
You're absolutely correct. Sending the right is also about sending the right message to the right person at the right time. The right time. The time aspect is more important than people think. Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of ways to begin doing this. I started earlier. It's like a lot of businesses, they have these lists of like 15-year-old, like they're 15 years old and they're just sending an email, the same email to all those people. With no segmentation, and then just it blows up in their face, right? That's just what happens.
Constantly.
The first thing that you should do is you should remove anybody older than 1 year from that list. And what you do with that, all that data you collected, I understand it costs you a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort, but you cannot send anything to them. Just don't even try. What you can do is you can take that information and you can upload it to Google. And you can upload it to Facebook and you can run remarketing campaigns. And they will come back if they need your service. But their situation might have changed. They might have changed job. That email address might go stale. And that's actually a really big problem. Like stale Yahoo and Gmail addresses turn into spam traps. And that's not great for anybody, especially deliverability. And like, if you do that, you're just going to get booted off your sending service, which is not great. So just anything older than a year, get rid of it. Every month we delete, we don't delete, but we unsubscribe emails that are not customers, leads, that have not engaged with our content in over a year.
I have over 3,000 like that, Adrian.
Yeah, and we do that every month. We remove them if they haven't been with us in over a year. If they haven't opened an email, they haven't clicked, they haven't visited the website, they've just been inactive. They just dropped off. And we're like, well, we upload them to Facebook remarketing, and if they come back, they come back. Yep. That's really all we can do. But continuing to waste resources on this person is not effective, and it won't be. So that's the first thing that anybody's got to do. The second thing that people got to do is, for the people that are left, right, the people that you have, we have to collect some information on them. We have to do a little bit of digging. We have to do, and if you haven't been doing this from the start, it might be very difficult to start to get that data from them. Depending on how invested or how engaged they are. There's a couple ways you can do that. You can send an email with like a survey in it. It's like, which best describes you? I'm starting a business. My business is old. My business is failing, like whatever. And then they click the button and then you know something about them, right? And then you can just do that every once in a while and continue to build up your information. If you are, you know, doing lead gen, right? If you're collecting leads or people are signing up for stuff, it's probably a good idea to get that information at that time. So maybe after you've collected that email address, you immediately drop them on a page where it's like, which best describes you? And they tell you what their current situation is. And when they tell you what their current situation is, guess what you can do? You can send them something that immediately relates to their situation. Right? Like we work with a few different types of businesses. We work with small businesses, we work with agencies, and we work with nonprofits. Those are sort of like the three main verticals of business that we work with. We do not send the same message to agencies, nonprofits, and small businesses. Those are three different segments. We send them different messages that relates to their situation. An agency probably has different problems, which is why they're coming to us, than a nonprofit, right? Nonprofit are using nonprofit specific software. They're poor, usually. They have some other growth pains. And then agencies, they're coming, they're flush, they're not poor, they're fine. But they're having problems with scalability. They're having problems with those. So we're going to tackle those different problems differently.
Yeah, makes sense.
And so when we collect that lead, it's like we put them into that specific bucket. So if you're doing car insurance, right, a good question to ask might be, do you already have your car? Are you in the market for a car? How old is your car, right? Because you might have different, you know, packages or offers or information for these different people. Like if someone says, I don't have a car yet, I'm just looking, then you might want to send them a guide on how to pick the best car for you. Like that seems kind of obvious. That doesn't immediately get you the business, but it does create a good feeling. It's like, well, I want to know how to get the best car for me.
Yep.
Right. So that person needs a different level of attention than someone who says, I have a car and I need insurance now. Like, all right, well then get on the phone or something. That's what we qualify as a hot lead. Like you might want to do something. And if they have like an older car, well, there's also like legacy or there's a classic car insurance and stuff like that. And that might be like a different person. That might not even be your company. Right. Yeah. And you might save yourself a lot of work investing in the lead process only to discover that this person has a classic car that you're not going to support. Right? That's called pre-qualification. And so once you like start collecting this data, you can segment your messaging. And in the customer journey, you can discover what is the right time. So for a hot lead, the right time is now.
Yes.
Right? But for someone who hasn't bought a car yet, right? What do you do in that situation? Right? Do you try to sell them insurance now? Probably not. Like, guess what? Yeah. That's wasted effort. They're not going to buy. And probably they're like, I don't have a car. Why are you trying to sell me insurance? Like, and that just turns them off and they're going to go somewhere else. Right. Yeah. And so the art is to continue to send them education to the point where they get a car and then they come back. And that is the point where you do a little bit of long-term nurture, you do a little bit of follow-up, you know, and you don't, and you're not too pushy about it. Like you mentioned, like you know, you just got glasses and like every day, and that might be a lot. Right. So yeah. It's just like a little drop in, like maybe once every like 3 weeks, like, hey, just checking in to see like how your car purchasing process has gone. In the event that you want to start looking for insurance for a new purchase, like, you know, just schedule a call with us here, link to a booking calendar or whatever. Here's a little bit of more information. Like, here are the cars that are currently getting the best insurance rates. Right. So if you want a really, really great insurance rate, these are the cars that you should be buying. Something like that. Right. It's like be targeted in your messaging. I cannot stress that enough. If you're just sending the same message to everybody, it's just not the best strategy, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
I think your opinion's a real valid one. And along that line, and I don't know if you're going to go there or not, one of the things I always say to people is never, never, never send from a do not reply address, whatever you do. Yeah. And big business loves to do that. And you know what that screams of, Adrian? You don't want to engage with them.
Yeah, like big. So the difference between me, for example.
Yeah.
And let's say HubSpot, right?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a revenue discrepancy there. We're working on it, but once you get to that level, it stops being about relating to the customer, and the lawyers and the accountants take over, and it starts to become about liability.
Yep.
Right? The do not reply address is a liability instrument. Because if someone replies to that email and they have something to say and they're expecting a response and they're not going to get one, that is a bad customer experience. And very potentially bad. A liability issue, depending on the subject. And so the do not reply address is a method to prevent that, because I can't imagine, like, HubSpot must email millions of people, right? Mm-hmm. And can you imagine the number of responses to that? So to an extent, I appreciate what it's for.
Yep.
Like, but most people are not HubSpot.
Yeah.
Like, if you're supporting less than 10,000 customers, there is absolutely zero reason to have a do not reply email address, right? Because the engagement that you're going to get from 10,000 people is just not going to be that much, right? And if it is a lot, guess what? You should probably just have someone to take care of that. Like, assign it to your front desk, assign it to support, assign it to whoever to just reply. Because the customer, because businesses that engage do better than businesses that don't. And so to a degree, I absolutely agree with you that the do not reply is a method to not engage. But for like huge organizations, you can understand
that's why. That's a different ballgame.
It's a different ballgame than small business. But if you're a small business, do not have a do not reply.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. Just engage with people. Like, all the emails that I send, guess where they go? They go to my personal inbox, because I love to read what people have to say. And I use that to improve the messaging, to improve the targeting, to come up with content ideas. Like, in this email where I have, like, I hated this email, it was fine, it was great. They go to a forum and they're like, what would you like to hear about in the future? And people just give me ideas. And guess what? That's a highly relatable topic that somebody's going to care about. And if somebody cares about it, chances are more people will care about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So much so.
We're just going to let that sit for a second with people.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go from here?
I think the big word in there is care. So it's so hard with the days of AI right now to get good emails. And it seems all these marketers are jumping on AI. And I'm guilty of it too. And I'm sure you are at times too, right? You go to your favorite AI.
Oh, super guilty, for sure.
And you say, spit me out an email about this. And it was funny. I was saying to somebody yesterday before, saying I had this conversation coming up with you. And I said, do you know what bugs me? I got 15 SEO proposals in my inbox, and I swear they all came out the same AI bot. Every last one of them. And there's no personalization in them. That's a big deal. You know that, and I know that, right? And there's no nothing. And it's, oh, we can help you, but did you do any research about what I do before you offered to help me? And I, and somebody probably took some keywords, dumped it in the ChatGPT, and said, here you go.
Yeah, I don't, it must work. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. So
yeah, I know.
It must work. It must just be a numbers game. And they, like, they latch on to an unsuspecting small business owner that they spun up a Wix site, right? And they're new and they don't know any better, right? And then that's that's just right. And that's why inboxes are locking down. That's why they, like, all the new Google compliance stuff, Apple Mail privacy protection. They're just there's a constant tension between marketers and inboxes, because no the question. Line between marketer and spammer is very thin and very gray.
Yes.
Like, so we've been using the example of a 15-year-old email list with a few thousand people on it, and someone uploads it. They just send an email. Do you know what that person is? They have the best of intentions. They probably have a legit business. They probably do everything right. And then all they do is they just upload the list that they've worked very hard on and spend a lot of money to collect, and then send an email. And guess what that person is? It's not a marketer. That's a spammer.
Yeah.
Because they're not practicing good email sender habits, which is you should have stuff that relates to the person. You're practicing COI, confirmed opt-in. You are actively removing inactive people from your list, right? And but because people don't know what they don't know, but what you don't know can hurt you.
Yeah.
It can.
Yeah.
And so my message to anybody who's been on this, who's listened to this, and like, oh my God, that's me. And I hope I challenged your previously held beliefs and ideas about email a little bit, and you're like, maybe I should make a change. I invite you to do a lot more research into this topic. Go learn about, and if you want to just go to the Groundhog blog to do that, we have all of that there. Like all the Apple Mail privacy protection, all the good sender habits, what you should be doing, how to send good email and how not to send bad email, right? Because again, sending good email is hard.
Yeah.
Sending bad email is easy. And so if you see someone on Twitter or whatever, sending email is easy, you know. I would immediately be skeptical. I mean, I've been into this industry for a long time. That's my two bits. Those are my two cents. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. No, it's funny. People like to send cold emails occasionally, which I question how much they're worth. And the problem with cold emails, forget the CRM side, right? Let's talk about it. Is I always say to people, if you're going to send a cold email, do yourself a favor. Don't send it from your domain where your email list is coming from, please and thank you.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is if those cold emails get marked as spam, then you don't compromise your main domain. I know that sounds like an underhanded marketing tip, but... I wouldn't do it any other way if I was going to. Now I don't send out cold emails. So what do you think about that?
Marketers ruin everything.
Yeah.
You've heard that before. My dad says that all the time.
Of course he does.
Marketers ruin everything. And marketers are basically hackers in like the loosest sense, because any way that they can exploit or find a loophole to deliver their message to a recipient, right? It's like, they'll find one. And that's why the inboxes are like clamping down on all this stuff, right? Yep. Again, the line between marketer and spammer is very gray and very thin.
Yeah.
I have mixed thoughts on cold email. Nathan Berry. You know who Nathan Berry is, right?
Very much so.
Yeah. So when he was starting with ConvertKit, right? I have that right. Nathan Berry ConvertKit. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So when he was starting with ConvertKit, he went on, and I read this Twitter thing, because again, highly relatable, because he started a CRM company, I started a CRM company, right? It was entertaining. It was packed with value. It was consequential, right? So I read the whole thing on Twitter, well, back when it was Twitter. And he was like, the way that like he was like, ConvertKit was floundering and I didn't know what to do. And so I just started cold emailing people.
Yep.
And I was like, I will. And he, and but what he did was different than what most people do for cold email. He went into his the inbox and he researched people that he thought he could help.
Yep.
And he didn't just buy a list from Built With or something, which some people do. He identified people that he thought he could actually help that were on his list already, that might have been like tangentially related from conferences, whatever. And he went and he looked at their site and he made an offer and he's like, I think we could really help you over here at ConvertKit. We can reduce your bill by X amount and we'll actually switch you with a free migration, was the offer, mm-hmm. right? Which is high effort for him, right? That is a high level investment that he's willing to make in their business, right? And all they really have to do is say yes, right? And that's a low effort for them. Right. And that's the difference between most between that kind of cold email and most cold emails. Like it was highly personalized.
Yeah.
Right. It was actually coming from him. He wasn't using like a cold email software. He wasn't just uploading a list and sending it out in an email blast. He was like typing out each email individually after doing research. Right. Which most people don't do. And you do that and that takes time. And guess what? That's also hard.
Yeah.
Right? No question. Sending good email is hard.
Hard.
It just is. But guess what? It's also worth it. Things that are hard are usually worthwhile. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Nothing worthwhile is easy. Nothing. Yeah. I want you to tell me one thing that's worthwhile that's easy. It's just not.
I always say the harder it is, the more worthwhile it is at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it's yeah so that's so that's if you're doing your research and you're making a legitimately valuable offer that you can coherently explain in a few very short sentences in order to get someone's attention, right? Mm-hmm. That is high effort for you and low effort for the person on the receiving end. That might be a good example of a cold email. But all these SEO audits, we all know that's bullshit.
Yep.
We all know. Like, what even is an SEO audit anymore? It's like, we have so many free tools. Like, we have, like, so much knowledge on search engine optimization. And guess what? None of it freaking matters anymore because the fourth organic search result is always Reddit.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So, like, it doesn't even matter anymore. Create valuable content that people care about.
Yep.
And provide a valuable service that is consequential. And that is the formula.
Yep. I agree. We've had you on before. We've talked about Groundhog. What changes have you made to the product that make it easier for somebody to run an email automated CRM?
Well, keeping it in sort of the spirit of the subject so far, which is sending good email, I'll point out some of the ways that we empower small businesses to make it easier. It's still hard, but easier to send good email. Confirmed opt-in stuff is immediately top of mind. There's a lot of GDPR, there's a lot of Castle, can spam, like there's all these different privacy regulations, and we're on the pulse, we're on the bleeding edge, where we have tools that implement and automate the process of collecting that information and that consent. And we even, like, it's even recommended now to start like collecting that consent on a regular basis, because if people consent and they're keeping their sort of status fresh, you know that that is a high value person on your list and that you can continue to send good email to that list, right? So we're just making it easier for people to maintain a high value list and to remove leeches, basically, to remove things that devalue the list. So we have lots of reports and lots of filters to remove inactive people from the list and to catch spam and to do all those things. We have like integrations with like zero bounce and stuff to like filter out emails and stuff, do email validation. In terms of the actual like design process of emails, by far the largest thing that we've done in recently. In November last year, we launched our new drag and drop email editor, which is chef's kiss. It's phenomenal. It's really good. I'm really happy with it, actually. We've been working on this email editor for 3 years. Okay. So we started off with trying to do like a Gutenberg implementation of the email editor. And there's a couple other people that are doing that, like Newsletter Glue does that, and Fluent CRM has a Gutenberg email editor as well. Honestly, we just got frustrated and gave up. Yep. We're just like, screw this, we're gonna build our own. And then we started building our own, and then we weren't happy with the way that we built it, and then so we started over again. And this most recent time that we started over, we actually ended up something that we're very happy with. It's very fast. It's mobile responsive. It's got all the style controls. You can honestly, like, if you go to like BeFree or Stripo or any of those like sort of brand name email designers that just let you export HTML templates, you can do all that within our email editor. Plus it's got a bunch of like WordPress focused features, like inserting posts automatically into newsletters and whatnot. It's got short code support. It's got HTML blocks. It's got it automatically pulls links from WordPress, so the links autocomplete when you're writing. It's just phenomenal. It really is. And the other thing that we do is we automatically convert. So if you're writing your beautiful HTML email with columns and font colors and all that fun stuff, you only have to write that email once, and it also automatically converts it into a context-rich markdown format in plain text to send out the plain text version of that email, which is the best practice for deliverability. If you're sending HTML emails, to also send a plain text version. And it's context-rich, so it has like all the links and stuff in it, and it's completely automated, and it's perfectly readable every single time, which was super important, because the way that we used to do that would just like strip all the HTML out and then send that, and that's just not great because it's not readable. But we took a lot of care with developing a beautiful conversion process. So you only have to write the email once. You don't have to write your own plain text version, which you used to have to do if you wanted it to be nicely readable. That's probably the biggest thing. If you want to send good email, it starts with being able to write and design good email, and our tool makes it easy to do that.
Yeah, it does. How is what's on the roadmap down the road? Can you share anything you're working on?
Yeah, so we're working on email archives, so you can share a public link like MailChimp to see the emails that you've previously sent. So you can select or add an email to a campaign, and then you can share a link for that campaign, and then it shows all the previous emails in that campaign, which is kind of cool. We're working on updates to our calendar add-on to make it much more beautiful, team calendars. We're updates to our company's add-on to make the directory more usable, and to also make the search filters and custom fields accessible as well for companies. So we're doing a lot. We're doing a few fun stuff. If anybody is interested in what we're actually like currently working on, you can go to groundhog.io/feature requests. And all that information is there. We have it on the website. You can see what people have asked for, what we're currently working on, what's planned, what's in progress. So go check it out.
What is your most requested feature at this point?
Well, it was a better email editor, but we solved that.
You solved that one. Yeah. That one was everything.
That one. Yes. Yeah. That's what it was. Probably the big ones now are related to the calendar, which is what we're currently working on.
Yeah. This has been a journey. Adrian, for you. I mean, those who don't know your background knows your dad's company was an Infusionsoft partner. You were probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't Training Business Pros the number one Infusionsoft reseller in Canada at one time, I believe?
We were. We absolutely were.
And then you
I was an Infusionsoft certified partner as well. I was doing Formlift, which was like a, which is currently a form plugin for Infusionsoft that connects Infusionsoft to WordPress in a more beautiful way through forms. So we started out there a long time ago. Like the first time we were talking, the first time I spoke at a WordCamp was in like 2017. And then I had started in WordPress, developing WordPress plugins a couple years before that. So I've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. It's been a journey, an amazing journey. And coming out of Canada and coming out of local, you're pretty local to me, I would say, you know, and there's a lot to be thankful for there. I think if somebody's looking for a good CRM, honestly, go check out Groundhog. Go talk to Adrian. Send him a tweet, a DM. You do answer all your DMs, generally.
I answer most of them. I try to answer as many as I can. I do. Yeah.
Now what you need to do is get that little plush groundhog in a merchandise store and you'd be all set, you know?
That's an in progress. We're going to have,
I want some one. I want one.
That is in progress.
Yeah. I've been saying that for a while. I want one. So, you know, customer here. So there you go. If somebody wants to talk to you about Groundhog email marketing, what's the best way, Adrian? A tweet?
We got all the channels. We got Groundhog on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, Adrian Toby. Yeah. You can just look me up. Groundhog.io is the website. You can email me, adrian@groundhog.io. If you look for us, you'll find us. We got live chat on the website. We're happy to chat. I'm happy to chat with you.
Yeah. Adrian, as always, thanks so much. And we will see you soon, I'm sure. Have a wonderful day.
It's been fun. Appreciate Thanks for having me.
Thanks. This show is brought to you by stunningdigitalmarketing.com, your Toronto leader in digital marketing services. Not only do we protect your WordPress website, we can help you with your site, provide social media management for your business, or even do one-on-one consulting. To find out more, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com. A very special thank you to Adrian Toby for joining me on this edition of the SDM Show. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. I love you, and I think about you every day. For more information about Stunning Digital Marketing, your digital marketing experts, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com or go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info to find out all the great places that Rob Cairns can be found on the web.